Hello, podcasters. It is Wednesday. Great show for you today. Joe Biden, we're still waiting on pins and needles. He's supposed to announce tomorrow, but we do have some information on some of the people that are running against him, in particular, Kamala. Did I say it right?
Yes, you did.
Kamala Harris. We have an update on her, also an update on the end of the free market system, and the fat sex therapist that I couldn't take another second. The fat sex therapist that you don't want to miss.
Also, we go through an incredible documentary called Seattle is Dying. If you maybe you live in a city or near a city that has really gone downhill, you kind of know or you kind of think that you understand the reasons for it. Seattle is Dying really shows a spotlight on Seattle, which is further down this road than almost any city in America, problems with homelessness and drugs and all sorts of stuff, and the way the city council is implementing social justice feel-good policies and destroying the city. It's incredible. We talked to someone who is on the board of a cemetery that's been desecrated by homeless people and drug users and prostitutes and everything else. It's a remarkable hour.
And it is the first look at our future, which really kind of culminates next Wednesday in a free special that is going to be on YouTube and Facebook and on Blaze TV for subscribers as well.
Yes, check that out. It's and join now, blazetv.com/Glenn. If you use the promo code Glenn, you will save $10. I'd also point out that tomorrow is NFL draft day, and Glenn Beck is going to attempt to predict the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna
You're really gonna enjoy it when you hear my my discovery of the New York Metropolitans.
That's definitely my favorite moment of the show today.
On today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Let me tell you about our spotlight sponsor. It is Home Title Lock. Home Title Lock, we found out. Did you find out about this first or did Pat?
Because yeah, I did.
You told Pat.
Yeah, we talked about it. And when I heard about it, I went to look into it, make sure that it was something real. But it is. It's one of the fastest growing crimes in America, according to the FBI.
Yeah. And so you tell Pat, and Pat comes to me and tells me, and he's like, well, you got to get this. I just got this. And I said, you just got this? He's like, yeah, Stu just got it. And he told me. Once you find out what it is and how real it is and that it is so easy to steal the title of your home, you lose your home, you're mired in debt. It's awful. There's only one company that stands against it and stands in guard of your title, and that's HomeTitleLock.com. Go there now. Get the free report. HomeTitleLock.com. Joe Biden, Stu. Joe Biden.
Yes. You're now, excited? Biden mania?
No.
Are you pumped up for Biden Palooza?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Joe-cella.
No.
No?
I like Joe-cella. Yeah, I like that one.
Okay. Joe-cella is supposed to come tomorrow. So what we expect now, and ABC News has confirmed, and this is different than previous reporting on when they're going to announce, which were just sources inside the campaign and the buzz is and blah, blah, blah. ABC News at least now claims that they've confirmed that Joe Biden will announce he is running for president of the United States tomorrow via a video. That will be Thursday, and then Monday will be his first campaign event, and that will be, I think, in Pennsylvania. He's gonna kick it off in Pennsylvania. So it's interesting because he is the front runner coming in. He will be the guy. He'll come in as the favorite. A favorite in a 20-person field, though, is not necessarily that exciting. You want to be ahead, obviously, but a 20-person field can shake out in a million different ways, obviously. So that's one of those things where it could be the best moment of his campaign is Thursday morning, right before he presses play on the video, right? Like, that's a very realistic possibility because people are going to pick apart his record. It's very lengthy. It is, he's done a lot of stuff, and he's run for president multiple times. And if you remember, he did not win any of those times. He is not an unbeatable candidate by any means in a primary. Democrats have handled him in the past. Now, he comes in here with the cachet of vice president for 8 years, 8 years that Democrats, generally speaking, remember well. Although there's a turn on that a little bit with progressives lately, but generally speaking, they remember the Obama administration pretty well. And he also comes in with a couple of advantages over people like Bernie Sanders. For example, Biden does very well with black voters. You know, this he is, I think, America's second black president. So Bill Clinton was first. Biden would be second. I don't know if Barack Obama counts. But I guess because depends on how he identifies on a particular day. We'll have to figure that out. Mm-hmm. But Biden does very well with African-American voters. He does very well in the Midwest as this kind of his target area. That obviously could be helpful in a place like Iowa, could be helpful in some early primary states. It could be very helpful to him in South Carolina, where he is. It's probably the biggest favorite of all, you know, as we start this off, where he looks to be the strongest. So Biden's got a great path. He's leading the polls. All the I smell hair and touch people's shoulders too often thing has not really given him too much of a bump downwards.
Well, may I bring you this from the CDC?
The Centers for Disease Control?
Yes.
Okay.
Public officials have confirmed the insect, and I can't pronounce the name of this insect, is a blood-sucking creature that feeds on animals and humans and has a particular fondness for biting faces. They have confirmed the presence of this bug, which they have deemed the kissing bug. They have said for the first time, it is here now, and it is in Delaware. I am not making that up. So the kissing bug that likes to creep up behind you and kiss your face and nibble on your face and your ears is in Delaware.
Wow. Maybe this is what happened to Joe. Maybe he was bit a long time ago.
Or he's just the kissing bug. He may be.
I think it's just him.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking it's more like a situation where like the fly, or like maybe he went into a chamber with one of these bugs and they meshed somehow physically. And like the molecular structure of his body turned into half kissing bug. So now he goes up and just, this is a good movie.
Could be. A family in Kent County, Delaware contacted local health authorities after something had bitten their child's face while she was watching television. Could have been Joe Biden.
Could have been Joe Biden. I don't think there's any doubt. In fact, now I'm confirmed it. ABC News is confirming that too.
The kissing bud.
Yeah, they're confirming the kissing bud fly meshing theory. This this is big. Don't call them for confirmation.
Fever, swelling at the infection site, fatigue, rash, body aches, eyelid swelling, headache, loss of appetite, nausea, diarrhea, vomiting, swollen glands, and enlargement of the liver or the spleen, and voting Democratic.
The best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
You look exasperated.
The fat sex therapist. I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to play the audio now of the fat sex therapist.
Don't do us any favors here.
Here it is.
Body size has always been a marker of coloniality, especially
coloniality.
Since the rise of capitalism in the 1600s and how we've seen white supremacy at work in many of these capitalist structures.
Stop. I am in on the coloniality.
Coloniality. This is not even a word. This is not even a word. You're making up words now.
I disagree with that. Coloniality is definitely
coloniality. If it's a word, it's a new word. They print words all the time. Ugh.
It does just...
What's it say?
It's showing up mostly in just like social justice.
Yes. They make up words. They're making up words.
Coloniality of power is a concept interrelating the practices and legacies of European colonialism in social orders and forms of knowledge advanced in post-colonial studies. Coloniality and Latin American. Who are the two guys that you had on? It was Peter Boghossian and James Lindsay. Mm-hmm. You had them on for a podcast, which is coming up in a few weeks, I think.
Yeah.
We're releasing it. And these are the guys that two of the three people who put these fake studies and all these, you know,
this is their kind of
this
stuff.
Is their stuff. Like these things, they're just a jumble of words. Like they just come up with these new words and they throw them in there and they make it seem like these are proven concepts or have some merit. And it makes you sound smart if you can pronounce them, unlike me. But if you could, it makes you sound smart for a few minutes until someone decides to start thinking about it. And then they say, wait a minute, what you've just said, you know, it's like that moment in Billy Madison where it's like, everything you've said has just made everyone here dumber. Like that is like, mm-hmm. You have made everyone here stupid because of your answer.
But what she's doing here is such important work. Again, back to the fat sex therapist.
And so the end of fat phobia, it means the end of Western civilization as we know it.
Stop. The end of fat phobia means the end of Western civilization as we know it.
So wait, so is she arguing for this or against it? So she's saying if fat phobia ends, which you'd assume that she wants to happen,
uh-huh.
then it will be the end of Western civilization. So she wants that to happen? She wants the end of Western civilization. Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. Western civilization, fat phobia has nothing to do with anything except what people look at and say, I want a piece of that. Okay? It's what you generally can't have or don't have. It's what the rich have. Okay? That's what it is. It started like this. Years and years and years and years and years ago, when everybody was a serf or a smurf, I'm not sure. I'm not up on my colonial. What is it again?
Coloniality.
Coloniality. Mm-hmm. Long before the free market system, painters were painting fat asses naked on women and hanging them in their castles. Why? Because the picture of a fat woman was the picture of health and wealth.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't starving. Why did ladies paint their faces so white in France? Because you had to work outside to grow your own food. So the idea of a very pale skin was a sign of leisure. Now we glorify not white skin, because white skin, you're sitting indoors all the time. You're working. The sign of a tan is, oh, he plays golf all the time. He must be wealthy. Oh, they're outside. They must be jet setters. That's all this is. That's all this is a sign of leisure time.
But that doesn't explain fat phobia.
Yeah, it does.
How?
Because
people are afraid of fat people, and you've not discussed
because
that.
Because if you are fat, it's the sign that you are just an average working Joe that is going out there, busting their butt. You're a mom in the school, you know, going to take the kids to school. You don't have time to work out. You're just eating at McDonald's, where the rich, they have
personal
time.
Trainers.
Trainer. They have time to go and work out. They have time to exercise. It's the in crowd. That's all that is. That's all that is.
But you think that's what she's talking about when she's talking about fat phobia?
No. She's saying.
Or is she talking about, like, you won't hire fat people, and you don't think they're sexy, and you like they're it's like they're, there's these all these privileges of not being fat.
Correct.
That are
that's
being
what
applied
she's
here.
Talking about.
Okay.
She's talking about, you know, the privilege of skinny people. This is a society of privilege. Blah 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 blah.
And
yes, but it's a human thing.
But she's also arguing for that to be torn down, right? Like she wants Western civilization to end.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Because it'll be replaced with rainbows and unicorns and puppy dogs.
Always is.
Always is.
All the countries around the world that have gotten rid of capitalism always worked out well.
Yes. And boy, you want to talk about skinny people, go to North Korea. All right, go ahead. Play some more.
Those things are connected. The end of fat phobia would mean the end of racialized capitalism. So when I talk about structures and systems, I'm talking about the root of it all. I'm not talking about us making a new law or us, I don't know, doing something else stupid like that. Right? If we
knows
need to burn it all
like
down
it.
Because it's all toxic and bad.
So she wants to tear down the whole society.
Because it's all toxic.
I really don't understand, though. Like, so the theory being, if we were to become unafraid of fat people, then racial capitalism would go away. Can you draw the connections there?
Tonight we're going to start talking about how to politicize our definition of body image, because oftentimes we actually get stuck thinking of it through the lens of a white supremacist.
What?
White supremacist happens every day in these little things, and yes, even in fat. We should be critical of the use of science and production of knowledge to contribute to promoting this idea of certain bodies that are fit, able, and desirable. Is my fatness, is that what causes my high blood pressure? Or is it my experience of weight stigma? I'm pretty sure it's your fat, sweetheart.
My experience of fat stigma?
Yes. Hmm. Yes. However, she pivots to support scientific findings as she pondered intentionally pursuing weight loss, claiming what we're discovering scientifically is that it's just not possible. She challenges all authorities, not just the authority that science has given us, but also the legal authority. The same way I want to challenge all laws, I want us to challenge all prisons and policing. She's a therapist who claimed that she will never have a professional code of ethics that tells her what she's allowed and not allowed to do with her body. She doesn't think that it's surprising that the man who shot up Christchurch in New Zealand was a fitness instructor. She said there is a clear communication. Listen to this. Uh-huh. There is a clear communication that there is still an idealized body. Nazis love this idea of the perfect body, so it makes a lot of sense that he was a fitness instructor.
You know, she's going to be surprised to hear it doesn't make a lot of sense. That's probably something that she should,
what are you talking about?
Aware of.
Makes a lot of sense.
Does it?
A lot of sense. Hmm. All fitness instructors are Nazis. I'm calling for America to come to its senses on Nazis. Nazis are clearly bad guys, but there's a few defining characteristics of a Nazi. And I can't believe I have to go through this, but I will. One, they hate Jews. Two, they hate everyone that doesn't look like them. That's important to say it that way because they happen to be in Germany, so they believed in the Aryan race. But you could be called a Nazi if you hate everyone else except your race. That's a sign of a Nazi. Another sign of a Nazi, and you really have to have more than one. You're a nationalist, which means you put your country first at the expense of all others, and you believe your country should rule the world, even if it's through brutal force. Next one, socialist. You have to be a socialist. You have to believe that, yes, your country should run everything, even by force in the entire world, but you also believe your leader and a group of you Nazis should lead the entire country. And even if it's through force, tell everybody else what exactly they should do, should not do, what they should eat, how they should work, all of that. That's what a Nazi is, not a fitness instructor. Okay? Not a fitness instructor. Also, a Nazi is not necessarily someone you disagree with. Yes, I disagree with all Nazis. But no, not all people I disagree with are Nazis.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
You know, the Blaze has had has had several graduating classes here, and one of the original alumni is Will Kane, and Will is an amazingly smart guy, really good guy. He's got a great career going for him, and I'm thrilled that he, you know, really kind of kicked his career off in some ways here. And now at ESPN, and he is demonstrating such courage. He didn't have to get involved in this Kate Smith thing, but listen to this argument. What show is this from, Stu?
I don't remember. It's him. It's and Stephen A. Smith. And I think Max Kellerman on ESPN.
So listen to what Will has to say about Kate Smith.
You're asking me and Max. Will, what are you suggesting should be done?
Okay. I'm suggesting it's an absolute and utter fool's errand to go back through history, decades, someone who's been passed away for 30 years, incidents which occurred 8 decades ago, and apply modern historical standards to something you can almost reach a century. I'm suggesting that your standard, yours, only requires a handful of people to be a little outraged to go back and tear statues down. And I'm telling you that by your standard, President Obama's statues would not stand to today's standards when it comes to gay rights.
Stephen
and
A.
That
and
to me is
That's pretty damn easy for you to say, because you're not the offended party. It's real easy for the person or the group that's not the offended party to take that position.
And let me just
say,
you're going.
Stop. Not, I mean, as a member of the not offended party in almost every circumstance, it is not easy at all. No. The easiest thing in the world is to act offended. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm with you.
It's called virtue signaling.
Exactly. That's the easiest thing in the world to do.
Correct.
Just go on with whatever party is being offended. You side with them. You look virtuous. You can't get in trouble. It's the easiest thing in the world to do.
It takes great courage to do what Will Cain did. And it takes a little bit of thing. Now, I don't know anything about Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah,
Stephen A. Smith.
Stephen A. Smith is, you know, he's an interesting guy, because sometimes you're like, yes, I totally agree with what he's saying. And then other times you're like, oh, man,
it takes no thinking at all. I mean, listen to what he just said. You know, my people are the
aggrieved party.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we don't put the family of those who a crime has been committed against in the jury box, nor do we put them in the seat of judgment on sentencing. We don't. We can listen to the aggrieved party and hear them and say, okay, I see how much damage has been done here, and we'll take that into consideration. But we don't let the aggrieved party judge or sentence. That's what's different about America. You're supposed to be blind on this. And if you are angry, you don't listen. And that's not me saying that. That's science. You don't listen. Your shields go up because you're angry and you're injured. The Kate Smith thing is so easy to talk about because, A, it didn't just happen 80, 90 years ago. It was a parody. It was making fun of racists at the time. But you're so angry about it that you won't even listen to that. You won't even look for that.
Yeah, it's similar to OJ, right? Like it wasn't listening to the evidence that made that him be not guilty. Even as
correct.
Jurors on the case have now admitted it wasn't about him. It was about how we've been wronged all this time. That's a terrible way to make decisions on individuals. But if you happen to be a collectivist, well, then it makes a lot of sense. And that's why this fight between individualism and collectivism is so important. I mean, because you can always be on the wrong side. Anyone can say they're the offended party. It's a great job by Will Cain there to stand up. He's not perfect. I mean, he's a Cowboys fan. But other than that, he's pretty good.
Coming up next, my hometown Seattle, dying.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Seattle is dying, and it's dying because of a socialist system, and it is spreading all over the country. Just this last weekend, the Dallas, Texas DA said, as long as people steal things that are worth less than $750, he will not prosecute unless it was to enrich themselves. What the hell does that even mean? What he meant was there are people that need things. And if they go into a store and they really need it, and it's less than $750, unless they were taking that to sell it, you know, then they're okay. We're not going to prosecute. That's the kind of stuff that leads to what's happening in Seattle and San Francisco. And it is destroying so many of our great, great cities. It's destroying them. Will anyone stand up? Well, the people are in Seattle. And what was so incredible in this documentary was to see how out of touch, no, to see how arrogant the city council and the mayors are, and see how they despised the people who voted for them. They despise them. We go there in 1 minute. Okay, Seattle, on fire, totally on fire. Let me play cut four. Seattle cop blogger quits, calls it a concentration camp. Listen to this.
There was a police officer named Todd Wiebke. He prided himself on getting his boots dirty, on meeting the people on the fringes, in the camps. He tried to find common ground as human beings, and he tried to police. He wrote a blog for a long time, first-person musings about patrolling what happens in the dark shadows of West Seattle. Not long ago, he wrote this. This week I dealt with crisis, with narcotics, with heartache, and with liars. Sometimes all at once, sometimes one at a time. I am helpless to unlock the doors when dealing with a person trapped in a horror inside of their own mind. Lord, I try, but I am a limited man with just a little skill. I still love coming to work. We have an awesome city with the ability to adapt and overcome. The only way to lose is to not try. We are trying to solve this crisis, and we will not lose. And then one day this past October, Todd Wiebke was told by one superior to impound an RV and clean up the spot. Mm. And when he did it, another superior scolded him for doing so because of new protocol. He had a bellyful, and he walked into HR, and he quit. Retired, just like that.
I feel like I abandoned the ship, that I walked away, and I did, because I couldn't do it anymore. It was just the bureaucracy built up to the point where I felt like I was no longer necessary as a police officer, that the system had a different idea of how they wanted to handle it, and I was an appendix. I needed to be gone, so I'm gone.
Ask anyone. They'll tell you this was a good cop, the kind we want out there, the kind we need.
But I will tell you that there is no morale. There's a love for the job.
He says the drugs, the camps, the theft, the rot, and the disgrace of it all don't have to destroy Seattle. They're being allowed to.
Everybody's trying to do the right thing. It's just coming out wrong.
Listen to these next words carefully. Let them sink in.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that the only thing I can equate it to is we're running a concentration camp without barbed wire, up to and including the medical experiment of poisoning these people with drugs. I don't know how else to put it, and it's infuriating.
Now, when people speak out, they're shouted down. Here's a lifetime resident of Seattle calling out the city council for ignoring solutions to the homeless problem. Listen.
Steve Danishek has spent his whole life in Seattle. He says when misdemeanors stopped being enforced, it was the beginning of the end.
And at that point, everyone got the message. It's a free-for-all down here. It's the Wild West. No laws apply. Do whatever you want. I could go down here and pee on the street or crap over there or smoke a joint. No one's going to get arrested for doing that because they're not doing that. They're not arresting anyone.
If I was a city council member, I might say, well, we're overwhelmed. We've got this homeless epidemic.
No. The city council is not overwhelmed by anything. The city council are idiots. They know that there are solutions out there. They simply have turned their back on the solutions.
The problem is, and you see in this documentary, it's from KOMO News in Seattle, called Seattle is Dying. Watch it, because it's coming to a city near you. The city council is brutal, brutal to the people who are standing up. They're like, you got to call the police. And the people are saying, I did call the police, and they said to come to you. Now you're sending me back to the police? People are just getting the runaround. That's why when I'm trying to describe this socialism, this Marxism that's coming, I try to do it charitably, but it is a group of non-expert experts who believe truly that they are smarter than the people that they serve. They make the rules, the laws, and market decisions that, yes, may hurt individuals, but those individuals are just part of out-of-favor groups. And those individuals can either afford it or deserve it. All things are done in the guise of or for the goal of social or economic justice. As those things begin to break down, those in control also begin to abuse their power through graft, greed, and ignorance. That's what's happening. They're just getting cronies coming in saying, oh, no, you're a genius. No, we can fix this. No, that's right. Give me some power. Give me some money and I'll help you. And the people are getting and the people on city council and the people in city hall are growing further and further away from the people and the problem. And that's what's happening in Washington, D.C. as well. Those people in Washington, D.C., do you think they actually like you? Do you think Nancy Pelosi wants to come over to your house and have dinner at your house? Do you think she would just fit in with all of your friends? That she'd be saying the same kinds of things that you're saying? Do you think? Because I don't. I don't think most of the people in Washington would be comfortable around you. Would be comfortable around me. They would come and see me because I have some sort of influence, they think. And so they'll come and see me, but they don't want to. They don't need to come see you, especially if we get rid of the Electoral College. They'll never see you. That's what's happening in Seattle. We're talking about a documentary that came out from KOMO News in Seattle called Seattle is Dying. I was shocked by this documentary because I grew up in the Seattle area, grew up in Mount Vernon, Washington. I love Seattle. It's one of my favorite cities. And it's just being destroyed. And I saw this documentary and I thought, I recognize the street corners that this is all happening on. This used to be a great part of the city. It's now just a horror show. And all in the name of Marxism and compassion. They are just destroying people. And I mean the homeless people, just destroying them. And all of the people that are living there are living through hell. And it doesn't seem to me like the city council has anything but contempt for the people who live in Seattle, pay taxes, and are trying to run businesses or just go to work. Ari Hoffman, he is a board member on a cemetery in Seattle that was part of this documentary. And we wanted to get him on to talk a little bit about, you know, his experience and what happened with the cemetery that he's a board member of. Hello, Ari. How are you?
Good morning, Glenn. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thank you for coming on the program.
It's my pleasure.
Sure. I don't know your politics, don't really care about your politics, but do want to hear about your experience in Seattle and what happened to you and the cemetery that you're a board member of.
Sure. I've been on the board for about 10 years, and the cemetery has been around for 130 years. And the name of the cemetery is Bikur Cholim, which translates to helping the sick. And it funds our synagogue services for the Jewish community. And what happened was I got a call about a year ago exactly that said, hey, Ari, we have a problem. Prostitution, drug dealers, pimps, drug dealers, and addicts have all moved into the cemetery. We have a real problem here. They're causing hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage. Can you help us out? And I went to elected officials. I went to city officials. I went to anybody I thought could help, and nobody was interested in helping us. So I took it to the media, and we started this massive media campaign, and finally enough pressure was brought to bear that things started changing. And we even had to bring armed former Israeli soldiers out to the cemetery to guard some kids who were putting flags in the ground for a Memorial Day event that they do every year.
What part of Seattle is it? This isn't a bad part of Seattle?
No, or is it all Seattle?
It's in North.
This is in Northgate, which is a nice neighborhood in Seattle, and nothing ever happens out there. We haven't had anything like this in 130 years of being in operation. And because of policies by the Seattle City Council, this is now happening.
So what are the policies that lead people to go and live in a cemetery?
It's much enabling behavior. People are coming from across the country because they hear that they can get free whatever they want in Seattle, and nobody's going to do anything. Nobody's going to enforce the rule of law, and they can get away with whatever they want. They can live wherever they want, and nobody's going to do anything about it.
When I was in San Francisco a few years ago, I was driving my car, and these homeless people came, and they were walking in the street, and they just started pounding on my hood. And they were just, they were belligerent. Who do you think you are with your car? And I was like, I'm just driving to the hotel. I'm what? And they were, you know, coming across the street, and they made it very clear they own the street, not the cars, not the people who are trying just to, you know, get to and fro and obeying the law. They own the street. Is that attitude pervasive now in Seattle as well?
Yes, near my office in Georgetown, which is a more industrial area, a whole bunch of these RVs have moved in, these broken down vehicles, which people are living in. And the city council keeps claiming these are homeless people, but I know that they're running drugs and other criminal enterprises out of these vehicles. And when I go up to confront them to get them to move, they say things to me like, I make more money dealing drugs than you'll ever see in a lifetime. It's become a very dangerous neighborhood. It's not safe. And Georgetown is unique because it has a residential neighborhood mixed in with commercial neighborhood. And the residents there are beside themselves. So one of these people stole in a full-size semi-truck, the cab part of it, and crashed into a few cars the other day. It's just out of control in that neighborhood.
So, Ari, you're running for city council.
Yes, sir. I decided I had enough of what was going on, and that the only way to get things done sometimes is to step in yourself and try and get it done. So that's what I did. I stepped up to the plate and said, it's got to be better than what these guys are doing. And I started doing my research, and I started analyzing, and I realized this was all a policy problem. And it was all the behavior they were enabling in Seattle, and they're not treating the drug addiction. They're not treating the mental illness, and they're calling it a housing crisis, a homeless crisis.
So, but it is really, and I'm sorry, I don't want to get into politics, but it is this social and economic justice attitude that creates these policies that are so prevalent in Seattle and San Francisco, and the arrogance that usually goes with that. I mean, I've seen clips of the city council. They're not listening to the people. They don't care about the people. It's almost like they despise the people.
It sure seems like that to me as well. We try to talk to them. They refuse to meet with us. One of them was supposed to come out to the cemetery to meet with us and send staff instead, even though we had organized the community to be there to meet with them. Another one refused to meet with us and said, flat out, had their staff tell us they're not meeting with us. And I just had enough of that. So what I did was I took their office number and their email for their office, and I put it online, and I said, hey, Jewish community, let them know what you think. And 6 hours later, they called me for a meeting because they got so much pressure. Mm. But at the same time, after that meeting, they said, you know, they made all these promises in this meeting, and they didn't follow through on any of them. And we still had to do things ourselves. I mean, during the winter, things got better at the cemetery just because people didn't want to be outside. They moved to other areas of Seattle. But just 2 weeks ago, the RVs came back and were dealing drugs again. And thank God we got a grant in the off season, I'll call it, for safety at the cemeteries. And we had to send the guards back out there to enforce things.
Jeez. How's your election going?
Well, I'm getting so many attacks online, I must be the front runner. We don't really do polling for these kind of things for city council races. So,
well, you're Jewish, so I don't know if you're a front runner. I mean, Jewish people tend to be a target now, unfortunately, and I'm sorry for that. But you can't put anything into attacks, but at least you're over the target if they're attacking you.
Exactly. I heard a good line from somebody that if you're getting heavy flack, you must be over the target.
Yes.
And I think my message is really resonating because there's people from all over Seattle, from all sides of the political spectrum, saying they want to support me because enough is enough and things have just gone too crazy. And that's the most unique thing to me, is how united the citizens seem to be in wanting a change on the Seattle City Council and wanting to push back of these policies that enabled all this.
I will tell you that I was struck by KOMO News the way this was written. I don't know how many times they asked the question, is this compassion? And the documentary was, I thought, really well done, and kept asking the question for a Seattleite, with a way for them to hear is through the heart, that if you're doing these things because you think this is compassion, you're wrong. You're sadly mistaken. You are seeing people on the people who are electing officials. Are you seeing elected officials at all waking up? Is there any sign that anybody else that's already in office is waking up, going, "Hey guys, this doesn't work"?
Not really. It seems more like they're saying the things that people want to hear occasionally, so that way they may have a chance at re-election. But it seems that the average citizen has said, "I'm tired of being called non-compassionate when I'm trying to get people treatment for drug addiction. I'm tired of being called non-compassionate when I'm trying to get people into shelters. I'm tired of being called non-compassionate because I don't want people sleeping on the streets or in their cars." And the citizens are tired of being told they're not compassionate.
Yeah. All right, thank you so much. Appreciate it, and good luck. Hoffman,
thank you for having me.
You bet. HoffmanForSeattle.com. Don't know his politics, but if you want to check it out, HoffmanForSeattle.com.
I don't think if you're in Seattle, you care about the politics of the person. You just want someone who's taking that issue seriously. It doesn't seem like there's anyone there doing it.
Yeah.
You know, you want someone who's going to take that on and actually be brave enough to stand up and say, "Hey, this is wrong."
I think that's what's happening all over the world. You know, people just don't care. And in Seattle, you know, they're letting people out on the streets that are really, really sick, and people that they know are going to commit more crimes. I mean, I don't know if you saw, did you see in the documentary the story of the rapist?
Yeah, you want to talk about real consequences? Listen to this.
Police say that on July 20th of 2017, this man, Louis Arby III, 41 years old, removed the screen from a woman's window at an assisted living facility in SeaTac and crawled in. The woman inside was brutalized for an hour. She was raped and beaten and choked and robbed. Police say Louis Arby also urinated on the floor. Afterwards, police say he left through the same window he'd entered through. The victim was treated for bleeding on the brain, a broken nose, and other injuries. She was 71 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a shocking and disturbing crime, but perhaps we shouldn't have been all that surprised. Just 4 days before the rape, just 96 hours before police say he scarred one woman's life forever, Louis Arby III was arrested here, sitting next to the fountain, right outside the King County Courthouse. Police say he was selling methamphetamine. That's him in the back of the squad car after the arrest. He was booked and then released almost immediately. Our criminal justice system decided that he shouldn't spend even 24 hours in jail. But even a brief look at his record would have shown that Louis Arby had come from California, where he'd spent 19 years in prison for kidnapping, robbery, and carjacking. Jeez. And had prosecutors looked a little more closely, they'd have known that Arby was the only suspect in a case 3 months prior in which a woman was taken hostage, forcibly shot full of drugs, and viciously raped and beaten for 15 hours. The King County Prosecutor's Office says, in this case, we had information that he had a 1995 California conviction for kidnap to commit robbery and other offenses. The prosecutors assigned to the investigation had no knowledge of other pending investigation. And so we are left with a question. How is it that a man is arrested in front of a courthouse in possession of a deadly drug that destroys lives? How is it that this man, who has a long history of violence, doesn't even spend 24 hours in jail? How is it that he is sent right back onto the streets?
A compelling, compelling, and compassionate documentary that I think everybody should watch. You can watch it. I watched it on YouTube. It's from KOMO TV in Seattle, and it is called Seattle is Dying. It's coming to a city near you.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.